You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday the 21st of December 2021, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Well, it's the winter solstice today. It's the shortest day of the year, where the sun is the furthest away from us, and from now on in, the days will get lighter, and spring will be on the way, and our ancestors used to celebrate this time of year. It's also the beginning of Yuletide, and I'm always surprised when people refer to Yule and think that they're somehow coming out with something anti-Christian or making a statement. And the word Yule has pretty much meant Christmas for the last 900 years. It's referring to Yuletide, which is just the time of year. A tide is roughly 7 days. You also have Whitsuntide in the summer. It doesn't imply anything anti-Christian or pre-Christian or anything like that. We used to have Yule festivities in Germany, but they became Christmas festivities. The church basically did not want to get rid of honouring the times of the year, did not want to get rid of our traditions. So Christian traditions just became a part of them. It's the same thing that we see when you see churches that are built in sacred places, and there'll be a holy well nearby, and the holy well will predate the church, or the church will be in a very close proximity to standing stones or other types of megaliths. And that's because we continued these traditions and we just Christianized them, basically. It doesn't imply anything anti-Christian to be using that sort of terminology or to be having stones near a church. I mean, it basically says that there wasn't animosity, that there wasn't friction between our old beliefs and our new beliefs, not here in Britain. There was in the Baltics, and what happened in the Baltics was that they were the last part of Europe to not actually be Christian. And the rest of Europe, the rest of Christendom, wanted these countries to be Christian and to be able to partake of Christendom and the Commonweal. And the Teutonic Knights went in there and forcefully Christianized them. And their motive for doing that was because they thought this would be of benefit to the people in the Baltics. They didn't do it out of hate towards their brothers. They actually did it out of Christian love. No matter how misplaced that may have been. And there was an instance in a grove, I believe, with Charlemagne, where he put some pagans to the sword. And again, that was because they were a different political faction to Charlemagne's political faction, and he wanted to unite the area, and it had more to do with that than forcing them to become Christian. We also have the grafting on of old figures from our past into Christmas and into Christianity, particularly with the Catholics, where quite a few of the saints that they have were actually pre-Christian figures of the form of deities, and they Christianized them. I think St. George actually goes back far before Christianity as because the word itself, George, it goes, it's the same beginning of the word geology, geography. It's to do with earth. It's to do with rocks. Then you have St. Michael spearing the dragon, and you have this imagery that goes back to Horus spearing the dragon. So all of these things become Christianized. And in actual fact, the only authentic Odinic tradition that we actually have today, and by authentic tradition, I mean a tradition that has continued since pre-Christian times right the way up through till today, is Father Christmas. Father Christmas is modeled on Odin with his reindeer flying across the sky, taking the sledge with him. People today will try to claim that they are following Odinic rites or they're Odinists. And what they're really doing is just following a modern interpretation of that. There was no following of Odin for about 1,000 years. And then modern day people with the Germanic revival and interest that we had in our past, particularly in our Indo-Aryan past, people wanted to revive these customs, and they thought that Christianity was somehow foreign to us. And the only way that they could end up thinking that is because they had forgotten that at the time of Christianity, the Near East was run by white people, the same as Egypt was run by white people. Alexander the Great went into Egypt and he revived the country, and it had a white aristocracy. And the only reason why Egypt was non-white is because there had been miscegenation that occurred there around about, I think it was 2000 BC, and then it became white again around about 1500, and then it became miscegenated again in 1000 BC, and Alexander the Great righted everything around about 300 BC. And when we became Christian, particularly in Britain, we became Christian at a very early stage. I think it was about 170 AD when King Lucius pronounced the whole country Christian. We understood at that time that Judea and the Near East and Cola Syria that had white people in it. It was all a part of the Roman Empire. And of course, the Romans were white. I also find it interesting that we actually have Christmas at this time of year, because the sun is the furthest from Earth. It's at its weakest. And of course, Christ tells us that he is the light that no man has ever seen. Like a mirror image of the sun. The sun is an imposter, really. We think it's the sun that gives us life, but the sun cannot reanimate a dead corpse. It's not the sun that actually gives life. It's something else that gives life. And the sun itself is a shadow of the true sun, which is Christ, who gives us life, and the true sun is the black sun. So when the material sun, the one that we can see, is the furthest away from us, and when we have the least light from that, that's at the time of year when the black sun is at its strongest, and the spiritual light is at its strongest. And of course, that coincides with Christmas, where we have peace and goodwill to all men, and the festival itself is known for being jolly. In actual fact, the word Yule goes back to a German word, Jewel, which I guess is where we get the word jolly from, because it is a happy time of year. And when you think in the summer, when the heat is up, you tend to get more fights, you tend to get more trouble in the summer. You certainly do at these solstice festivals that they have. At the summer solstice festival, you tend to get a lot of drunk people, a lot of people that are out of their heads. And then in the winter solstice festival, you don't get that. You don't get that at all. If any of our listeners have attended any of these solstice celebrations. So I find it interesting that Christ's birth is commemorated at this time of year. And then, of course, people will say, well, we don't know that he was actually born at this time of year. And that's quite right. I think he was probably born round about September time, if you think that the sheep were all still in the fields and the shepherds were all still in the fields when he was born. So they must have picked round about the winter solstice for a specific reason to honour Christ's birth at this time of year. And, you know, it could well have been because the sun was at its furthest away from us and the spiritual light was at its strongest point. And, of course, that would coincide with this good feeling that we've always had at this time of year. Even before we had the traditions that we now have with Christmas, it was traditional in the Roman Saturnalia for the master of the house to exchange places with the slaves and with the servants. And the master would serve the slaves and the servants, and everything would be sort of turned around, and it would be a time of fun and hilarity, and there would be the exchanging of gifts and the exchanging of presents. And again, this feeling of peace and goodwill to all men, and being charitable, doing what you can for your fellow man. And we should remember at this time of year in particular, we should remember the people that we have that are in prison, the nationalists that are imprisoned for whatever reasons, if it's been involved with their nationalism or with their nationalism goals, and if they've broken the law and they've ended up in prison, then we should be charitable. We should remember those that are not as well off as we are. And I did put the list that we have of nationalists who are in prison. I put that up on the website over the last couple of days. Some of you may have sent cards in to them. I always do try to send a card in every year with a brief letter, just to let them know that they haven't been forgotten. Of course, a lot of the people that are actually in prison are in prison because they've been found guilty of being members of a proscribed organization. And that can mean, well, it does mean, it means that they're looked upon as if they are terrorists, despite them not actually having been involved in any violent crimes or anything like that. I think some of them are in prison for putting stickers up, and others are in prison for continuing to be members of this organization. And of course, what they mean by continuing to be members is continued to hold the same ideas and continued to be friends with the friends that they had when they were in that organization. So it must be particularly hard for them to be portrayed as terrorists with the same descriptive word as people that have murdered people, beheaded people, blown things up. So whatever we think of that proscribed organization, we should still feel charitable towards the people that have been jailed for having something to do with it. And I would hope that the authorities would not look at people sending cards into them or writing to them as offering support for the organization, because it's not offering support for that. It's not condoning the crimes that they may have been found guilty for. It's an act of charity, and it's an act of mercy, and it's our Christian duty to do things like that, particularly around this time of year. Anyway, I got into all of that really because I was looking at an article on Telegram that was just talking about Yuletide and how it's Yuletide today, and it just reminded me of a podcast I did some years ago about the authentic Odinic tradition, and I've talked about this time of year before, and how the sun is furthest away from us, and the black sun is really at the strongest point at this time of year. But that's all a little bit esoteric, and I guess you will be wanting to hear some news stories here, and we have a news story from Chicago concerning one of our favourite subjects here at Radio Albion, transgenders and drag queens. A newly ordained pastor from Chicago is dressing up in drag in order to lead church services with children. Isn't that just great? He's newly ordained, he's been put in charge, he's been given a position of responsibility, and what is the first thing that he does when he's been given that position of responsibility? He dresses up as a woman in order to lead services with children. Is it a good idea for children to see men dressed up as women and to think that that is normal? Is that not likely to encourage these children to get involved in cross-dressing themselves? And is that not likely, or is that not likely in some instances, to give these children dysphoria with their bodies? Is that not likely to make them gender dysphoric? Do we want our children to be gender dysphoric? We don't want them to be unhappy in their bodies. We want them to be happy with what they have. And doing things like this is going to encourage them to not feel happy in their bodies, and it's going to encourage them to want to dress up like the exciting pantomime dame character that they see in front of them that is in a position of responsibility. This is a grown-up that is doing this. And of course, all children like to dress up, and that's what they think this is. And yet this is even worse than transgenderism, because drag queens are adult entertainers. And a lot of it that they do is very risque, and it's the last sort of thing that you would want to have a child exposed to. And yet when you look at the pictures of this, there are all these children there, and we know that they've been doing this in the libraries. They've had their drag queen story hour, and now they've moved on from that to drag queen church services, which is really making a mockery of Christianity. It says in the Bible that it's a capital offence for a man to dress in a woman's clothes. And it says that a man who is wounded in the stones cannot be a part of the congregation. So it's saying that any full operation transgenders, they should not be a part of the congregation. And if you're confused and you're wearing the opposite gender's clothes, then you certainly shouldn't be put into a position of leadership. And we know from looking at homosexual writings on this sort of thing over the last century that they wanted to infiltrate the church and subvert the church. And that's exactly what they've done. And our church establishment today condones this, possibly because a lot of the establishment themselves are now homosexual. I mean, it's like that particular community did really target the church in order to do this. We probably see more open homosexuals in the clergy today than anywhere else. And of course, then we get this scandal about pedophilia in the Catholic Church. And all of that pedophilia that we hear about in the Catholic Church, it's always to do with young boys. It's always homosexual pedophilia, but they don't call it homosexuality that's going on. They don't tell you that it's usually choir boys that are 14, 15. I believe the age of consent could be 18 in some parts of America. And what is going on there with this pedophilia in the Roman Catholic Church is these homosexual priests that are going after adolescent young boys, rather than going after pre-adolescent young boys. It is strictly homosexual child abuse that is going on there. And that gets covered up by referring to it as pedophilia. And instead of saying, well, we really should not have homosexuals leading within the church because we can see that there is this risk that all these children are being abused, they cover that up. They refer to it as pedophilia. And they praise homosexuals that are now in the church. And we have the BBC that regularly feature them, and Radio 4 that will regularly have on these homosexual priests, despite the fact that they are blatantly going against Christian rule, Christian guidelines and Christian law. It tells us in the New Testament that men will be given up to lusts with other men as a punishment if they are not sufficiently zealous in their quest for the truth. So it means that people that are lying to themselves, that ignore the truth, that is given to them as a punishment. It's not given to them as something that they should be celebrating. And of course, we're told in the Old Testament that the Hebrews made it a capital punishment if anybody was caught engaging in homosexual activity. And that was the same with our ancestors as well. Before they were Christian, they used to throw these people in the peat box. We found the remains of their bodies, these homosexuals that were killed like that. And I'm not saying that we should be killing homosexuals at all. Don't mistake what I'm saying here. I'm pointing this out to show that our ancestors were very much against this, whether they were Christian or not. And they certainly were as Christians, and the church was very much against it. And that is not based on the church just deciding to be like that, the church authority saying, well, we're going to be against homosexuality. It's because Christ himself was against homosexuality and St. Paul and the entirety of the Old Testament. And yet the church today encourages this right up to actually having drag queens now addressing children in the church itself. Aaron Musser, who was ordained this summer, so it's literally 6 months after being ordained, and this is what he starts doing, can be seen addressing children from a pulpit in his church, dressed in a blonde wig, a white dress and makeup, before spreading the word of the Lord to children at his parish at St. Luke's Lutheran Church of Logan Square. And of course, he's not going to be reading the warnings about homosexuality to the children. He's going to be picking and choosing what he reads to them. The event took place last Sunday and saw Musser read a religious book about joy to a group of children. So it's all just about being joyful. It's all just about pleasure. This is the way that people are being encouraged to be today. They're being encouraged to just chase after whatever makes them happy. The church in the past used to tell people that what we should be doing is undergoing penitence. We should be doing without. We should be resisting temptations to indulge in our drives, our base drives, our drives towards pleasure. And by resisting our drives towards pleasure, then we would encounter a religious joy. And yet that is not what this pastor, this drag queen pastor, is going to be talking about. He's not going to be telling these children that they should be sacrificing things so that they can have a better life in heaven, that they should be doing without the things that that they most want. He is going to be telling them that they should just do, be whoever they feel they want to be, do however, whatever they want to do. Everything's fine because God loves everyone. This is the message that's being given today. It's the complete opposite of what the church has always taught before. He says, I have an awesome story to share with you today. And Musser could be heard telling the story as he tossed his hair either side, reports the Post-Millennial. I am also a boy most of the time when I'm here, but today I'm a girl, he explained. So this guy is leading a church service. He's in a position of responsibility, and he's telling the children that you can just change what sex you are. You can just be a boy some of the time. You can be a girl some of the other time. Again, this is to encourage these children to believe this sort of thing, which will lead to them having gender dysphoria, could lead to them being more at risk of being abused as well, because they're being taught that this is a normal thing to see. It's quite normal to see homosexuals and people dressing up as the opposite gender. And we do know that the instances of abuse amongst the homosexual community is higher than amongst the heterosexual community. So by saying to these children, you should be at ease around these people. And I mean, they encourage children to go along to gay pride now. They have the kids at school waving the gay pride flag. And it's just putting them at risk, because there is going to be a higher percentage of child abusers among the homosexual community than there are going to be among the heterosexual community. And if you've been saying to these children, these homosexuals are maligned and they're oppressed in society. The kids are going to be thinking, oh, I feel sorry for these people. We should go over there and we should be friendly to them. And of course, that could put them at risk of being abused. And of course, I'm not saying that all homosexuals are abusers. I'm just pointing out the statistics, which show that a very large proportion of homosexuals themselves were abused when they were children. I mean, even the famous ones, people like Milo Yiannopoulos will tell you that he was abused by an older man when he was a child. And he's grown up to be a homosexual. I mean, this is the way that it works. Of course, there are some that don't get the proper amount of testosterone when they're within the womb, and their brains form in a different way, and they're more feminine than they should be. But that doesn't mean that they should be engaging in homosexual activities. It just means that they would be better off with a female who had more masculine characteristics. But I forget the exact percentage in the statistics, but I believe it is a majority of homosexuals were actually abused when they were children, which is far more of a number than heterosexuals that were abused when they were children. Musser wrote in an announcement on Facebook, "The sixth Sunday of Advent is Rejoice Sunday. It is a chance for us to rehearse what a life of joy could look like. It's a dress rehearsal. Preaching in drag is a theological reflection on joy. Joy overflows so abundantly, it can't help but make itself known, weaving together the day's theme, queer theory, and lectionary texts. We will dress rehearse for joy." So he's just talking about indulging in passion, isn't he? He's talking about indulging in worldly passions and that bringing joy. And at the same time, he's talking about queer theory to these children. I mean, could you get anything more further removed from traditional church teaching? The announcement noted that seminarian Aaron would be preaching in drag, adding that the church wanted everyone to wear garments, accessories that make you feel 100% like the best version of yourself. So that's really not very subtly encouraging children to dress in drag themselves, isn't it? I mean, we've all seen this horrific picture of Desmond is amazing, young child, 8, 9 years old, young boy dressed up as a woman with homosexuals throwing money at him. There's another picture of him with an elderly drag queen naked with this boy. I mean, it's absolutely vile what is going on, and yet his parents haven't been reprimanded by the authorities for putting the child at risk. He's held up as a celebrity, and he goes on these chat shows, and that's what they're encouraging here. That's what they're encouraging with RuPaul's Drag Race and all these drag queens that you see on the television now. All these programs about it, and maybe people that don't have children themselves don't understand this. This is all being targeted at children to confuse them and make them confused about their gender. And a lot of, I dare say, some of the people that are doing this are deliberately doing it because it will help to provide them with access to children to abuse them. There was this San Francisco choir recently that were singing a song saying, "We're coming after your children." They were quite blatantly saying this, knowing that anybody that pointed this out would of course be accused of homophobia, and a number of the people that were involved in this choir were indeed pedophiles. They had a record for child abuse. So some of the people that are involved in this, in this promotion of drag queens to children, they are deliberately doing it so that they have access, easier access to children to abuse. And I'm not saying that this Lutheran pastor here is a child abuser, but what he is doing is making it easier for children to be abused. Musser writes openly about incorporating queerness into his teachings, stating that queerness is beautiful and aright, in one of his Facebook postings. Well, if everybody was queer, then everybody would die out within 30 years, wouldn't they? There would be no more children that were born. Is it right to be doing something that if everybody else was to do it, it would result in the death of the race? Quite clearly, it's not. Quite clearly, it's not a positive thing to be, because it means that you will never have the happiness of having your own family and your own children. And we know that the life outcomes for homosexuals are not good when compared to heterosexuals. A large number of them get involved in drugs. A very high proportion of them end up with diseases. They end up dying young. They end up with a higher suicide rate. I mean, on just about everything you can measure, homosexuals do not do so well as heterosexuals. It's not something that should be encouraged. And yet here he is telling children that it is beautiful and that it is a right. So he's encouraging them to be homosexual like himself. He continues, queer sexualities, gender identities, and gender expressions outpour from the depths of our being. We are who we are, and we can articulate our truth, he wrote on his personal Facebook page. But what he's really talking about there is temptation and passion and giving in to temptation. I mean, people always used to be taught in the church that it was good to remain celibate and you should not give in to your sexual urges. And yet queer theory is all about giving in to your sexual urges. And when these people do proudly proclaim that they are homosexual, which basically means they've been engaging in homosexual acts, they are praised as if they are being brave and courageous for doing this. And they're reaffirmed in doing this. And in actual fact, they're doing the opposite of what everybody has been encouraged to do in the past. You're supposed to keep sex for within marriage. And yet what they do here is that the homosexual community just encourage people to have sex as much as possible and with as many different partners as possible. In fact, they would get upset at a gay club if somebody would not have sex with them. He says, queerness is sacred. Certain straights don't believe that we speak the truth. And I'll just point out, how can he say that it is sacred when the main sexual act that they are known for is the reversal of the sacred act of marriage? The sacred act of marriage is the consummation of the marriage, which is the starting of a new life. And the homosexual act that they get involved in is doing the opposite of that. It means putting the generative organ in the place where the waste comes out, not the place where a child comes out, but a place where the waste of the body comes out. It's doing the opposite. It's like the equivalent of a black mass, which is doing the opposite of the church mass. And yet it is now called the same thing. It's now called you can have gay marriage, even though it's actually based around doing the opposite of what an actual marriage is. He added that he also has a political angle. If you vote red, you vote against me and my rights. And what is a church pastor doing preaching politics in the church? Surely the church and politics should be kept separate. Surely the church should be about bringing a community together and encouraging the community not to sin and encouraging the community to be charitable and merciful to one another. And that's not what he's doing, is it? What he is doing is he is encouraging the community to give in to their sexual temptations, the exact opposite of what original Christianity was about. In a heartfelt posting on the church's Facebook page, Musa said that it had been some time before many people had experienced joy. And of course, you just know that what he is talking about there, his experience of joy, will be entirely sexual. Because the more you are involved in masturbation, basically, the further you are away from God. And that's just a fact. It was Wilhelm Reich that first articulated that. And then it was used in the 60s to draw people away from God. They went into convents and taught the nuns how to masturbate, and all the nuns then stopped being nuns. I mean, that's one of the reasons why pornography is pushed so much, because if you're watching pornography, you're not praying. It does draw people away from God. Dr. E. Michael Jones is the main scholar who has done the research into this, and I do recommend his book Libido Dominandi, which provides all these examples of this. So the joy which Musser is talking about is actually a type of joy that removes people from God and takes them away from the church. He says, it has been so hard to know what the joy will be because it's been so long since some of us have been joyful. It's been a difficult and tiring couple of years. And I decided, instead of telling you, this is how I want you to be joyful, as we prepare for this dress rehearsal, I figured I would instead put on a dress, as so many who have inspired me have done. I decided to follow their example, showing that liberation from oppressive laws clears a path for joy. So he's really putting on this dress because he gets some kind of sexual pleasure from it. And he is mistaking that for the joyful bliss that comes from God. He says, allowing yourself to feel joy can be scary. Well, I dare say the sort of joy that he is talking about makes him feel guilty afterwards. That's why he points out that it can be scary. He says, I wasn't sure how the outside world would handle me when they saw me this morning. Joy is difficult to feel. It's vulnerable, but isn't it so beautiful? I mean, he's very vain here as well, isn't he? And I don't see how he can feel vulnerable when he gets an article in the Daily Mail out of this and he gets held up as being a hero. It's not that he is being oppressed. These people are now being held up as the heroes in our society. We can see this from the messages of support that were sent to him. Thank you for your inspiring and empowering message of beautiful joy, wrote Kristen Engstrom. Aaron, this is freaking amazing, added Taylor Walker. Thank you for sharing joy with us today, said Liz Frey, and on it goes. Despite the positivity aired online, the church has now stopped comments from being posted, and I dare say the people that weren't too happy about this were probably also posting, but they're not going to tell us what they had to say in this article. We have frozen comments on this post for the time being. We appreciate all the love and encourage you to keep praying for full inclusion, affirmation, and justice for LGBTQIA+ people in the church, the church wrote. So the church are really nailing their colours to the mast here, aren't they? They are supporting all of these various different variations on the homosexual theme, and they're making this church meeting that he was involved in all about something that used to be a mortal sin and encouraging people to engage in it rather than encouraging people to resist temptation. Musser's Drag Storytime is one of a number of similar events that have sprung up across the nation in recent years. Once upon a time in 2015, a writer in San Francisco named Michelle T. got the idea for Drag Queen Story Hour, men in full drag reading children's books to kids and parents in programs aimed at providing positive and unabashedly queer role models. So they're being quite open there. The whole point in doing this was to encourage the children to become like these queer role models. They wanted the children to get gender dysphoria, basically. Since then, Drag Queen Story Hours have been held at libraries or bookstores in big cities, including Los Angeles, New York, and costume-loving New Orleans. In some smaller communities, the programs have sparked protests from conservative and religious groups, but Chicago, where Musser preaches, is on the cusp of the Republican Midwest while being in a very left-leaning Democratic city. And sadly, I think this will not be the last time that we see preachers in churches now dressing as drag queens in order to teach their message, not God's message, the message of modern man and the modern world to our innocent and trusting children. Well, thank you very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.